digital station for comedy, drama, and entertainment. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, can a new warrior help a king beset by a demon? Seamus Heaney reads his own translation of the great Anglo-Saxon poem, Beowulf.
When the watchman on the wall, the shielding's lookout, whose job it was to guard the sea cliffs, saw shields glittering on the gangplank and battle equipment being unloaded, he had to find out who and what the arrivals were. So he rode to the shore, this horseman of Hrothgar's, and challenged them in formal terms, flourishing his spear. What kind of men are you who arrive, rigged out for combat in coats of mail, sailing here over the sea lanes in your steep-hulled boat? I have been stationed as lookout on this coast for a long time. My job is to watch the waves for raiders, any danger to the Danish shore. Never before has a force under arms disembarked so openly, not bothering to ask if the sentries allowed them safe passage or the clan had consented. Nor have I seen a mightier man-at-arms on this earth than the one standing here. Unless I am mistaken, he is truly noble. This is no mere hanger-on in a hero's armour. So now, before you fare inland as interlopers, I have to be informed about who you are and where you hail from. Outsiders from across the water, I say it again. The sooner you tell where you come from and why, the better. The leader of the troop unlocked his word hoard. The distinguished one delivered this answer. We belong by birth to the Geat people and owe allegiance to Lord Hialak. In his day, my father was a famous man, a noble warrior lord named Edgethil. He outlasted many a long winter and went on his way. All over the world, men wise in counsel continue to remember him. We come in good faith to find your lord and nation's shield, the son of Halfdane. Give us the right advice and direction. We have arrived here on a great errand to the Lord of the Danes, and I believe, therefore, there should be nothing hidden or withheld between us. So tell us if what we have heard is true about this threat, whatever it is, this danger abroad in the dark nights, this corpse-maker mongering death in the shielding country. I come to proffer my wholehearted help and counsel. I can show the wise Hrothgar a way to defeat his enemy and find respite, if any respite is to reach him ever. I can calm the turmoil and terror in his mind. Otherwise, he must endure woes and live with grief for as long as his hall stands at the horizon on its high ground. Undaunted, sitting astride his horse, the coast guard answered. Anyone with gumption and a sharp mind will take the measure of two things, what's said and what's done. I believe what you have told me, that you are a troop loyal to our king. So come ahead with your arms and your gear, and I will guide you. What's more, I'll order my own comrades on their word of honour to watch your boat down there on the strand. Keep her safe in her fresh tower, until the time comes for her curved prow to preen on the waves and bear this hero back to Geatland. May one so valiant and so venturesome come unharmed through the clash of battle. So they went on their way. The ship rode the water, broad-beamed, bound by its hawser and anchored fast. Boar shapes flashed above their cheek guards, the brightly forged work of goldsmiths, watching over those stern-faced men. They marched in step, hurrying on till the timbered hall rose before them, radiant with gold. Nobody on earth knew of another building like it. Majesty lodged there. Its light shone over many lands. So their gallant escort guided them to that dazzling stronghold and indicated the shortest way to it. Then the noble warrior wheeled on his horse and spoke these words. It is time for me to go. May the Almighty Father keep you and in his kindness watch over your exploits. I'm away to the sea, back on alert against enemy raiders. It was a paved track, a path that kept them in marching order. Their mail shirts glinted, hard and hand-linked. The high-gloss iron of their armour rang. So they duly arrived in their grim war graith and gear at the hall, and weary from the sea, stacked wide shields of the toughest hardwood against the wall, then collapsed on the benches. Battle dress and weapons clashed. They collected their spears in a seafarer's stook, a stand of greyish, tapering ash, and the troops themselves were as good as their weapons. Then a proud warrior questioned the men concerning their origins. Where do you come from, carrying these decorated shields and shirts of mail, these cheek-hinged helmets and javelins? I am Hrothgar's herald and officer. I have never seen so impressive or large an assembly of strangers. Stoutness of heart, bravery, not banishment, must have brought you to Hrothgar. The man whose name was known for courage, the Geat leader, resolute in his helmet, answered in return. We are retainers from Healak's band. Beowulf is my name. If your lord and master, the most renowned son of Halfdane, will hear me out and graciously allow me to greet him in person, I am ready and willing to report my errand. Wulfgar replied, a Wendel chief renowned as a warrior, well known for his wisdom and the temper of his mind. I will take this message, in accordance with your wish, to our noble king. With that he turned to where Hrothgar sat. Wulfgar addressed his dear lord. People from Geatland have put ashore. They have sailed far over the wide sea. They call the chief in charge of their band by the name of Beowulf. They beg, my lord, an audience with you, exchange of words and formal greeting. Most gracious Hrothgar, do not refuse them, but grant them a reply. From their arms and appointment they appear well-born and worthy of respect, especially the one who has led them this far. He is formidable indeed. Hrothgar, protector of shieldings, replied, I used to know him when he was a young boy. His father before him was called Edgthil. A crew of seamen who sailed for me once with a gift cargo across to Geatland returned with marvellous tales about him. A thane, they declared, with the strength of 30 in the grip of each hand. Now holy God has in his goodness guided him here to the West Danes to defend us from Grendel. This is my hope, and for his heroism I will recompense him with a rich treasure. Go immediately, bid him and the Geats he has in attendance to assemble and enter. At the door of the hall, Wulfgar duly delivered the message. My lord, the conquering king of the Danes, bids me announce that he knows your ancestry, also that he welcomes you here to Heorot, and salutes your arrival from across the sea. You are free now to move forward to meet Hrothgar in helmets and armour. The hero arose, surrounded closely by his powerful thanes. A party remained under orders to keep watch on the arms. The rest proceeded, led by their prince under Heorot's roof. And standing on the hearth, in webbed links that the smith had woven, the fine forged mesh of his gleaming mail shirt, resolute in his helmet, Beowulf spoke. Greetings to Hrothgar. I am Haelec's kinsman, one of his hall troop. When I was younger, I had great triumphs. Then news of Grendel, hard to ignore, reached me at home. Sailors brought stories of the plight you suffer in this legendary hall, how it lies deserted, empty and useless, once the evening light hides itself under heaven's dome. So every elder and experienced councilman among my people supported my resolve to come here to you, King Hrothgar, because all knew of my awesome strength. And so my request, O King of Bright Danes, dear Prince of the Shieldings, friend of the people and their ring of defence, my one request is that you won't refuse me, who have come this far, the privilege of purifying Heorot, with my own men to help me, and nobody else. I have heard, moreover, that the monster scorns in his reckless way the use of weapons. Therefore, to heighten Haelac's fame and gladden his heart, I hereby renounce sword and the shelter of the broad shield, the heavy war board. Hand to hand is how it will be, a life and death fight with the fiend. Whichever one death fells must deem it a just judgment by God. Fate goes ever as fate must. Hrothgar, the helmet of shieldings, spoke. Beowulf, my friend, you have travelled here to favour us with help and to fight for us. My household guard are on the wane. Fate sweeps them away into Grendel's clutches. But God can easily halt these raids and harrowing attacks. Now take your place at the table. Relish the triumph of heroes to your heart's content. Then a bench was cleared in that banquet hall so the Geats could have room to be together, and the party sat, proud in their bearing, strong and stalwart. An attendant stood by with a decorated pitcher, pouring bright helpings of mead. And the minstrel sang, filling Heorot with his head-clearing voice, gladdening that great rally of Geats and Danes. Then the grey-haired treasure-giver was glad. Far-famed in battle, the prince of bright Danes and keeper of his people counted on Beowulf, on the warrior's steadfastness and his word. So the laughter started, the din got louder, and the crowd was happy. Wealhtheow came in, Hrothgar's queen, observing the courtesies. Adorned in her gold, she graciously saluted the men in hall, then handed the cup to all ranks, treating the household and the assembled troop, until it was Beowulf's turn to take it from her hand. With measured words, she welcomed the Geat and thanked God for granting her wish that a deliverer she could believe in would arrive to ease their afflictions. He accepted the cup, a daunting man, dangerous in action and eager for it always. He addressed Wealhtheow. Beowulf, the son of Edgetheow, declared, I had a fixed purpose when I put to sea. As I sat in the boat with my band of men, I meant to perform to the uttermost what your people wanted, or perish in the attempt, in the fiend's clutches. And I shall fulfil that purpose, prove myself with a proud deed, or meet my death here in the mead hall. This formal boast by Beowulf the Geat pleased the lady well, and she went to sit by Hrothgar, real and arrayed with gold.
Tomorrow, the great warrior battles the evil demon, Grendel. Seamus Heaney was reading his own translation of Beowulf. The producer was Susan Roberts.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, Lindsay Duncan reads Burying the Bones, Hilary Sperling's biography of Pearl Buck. Though her work has now fallen out of fashion, in her day, Pearl was a phenomenal bestseller. The novel that made her name was The Good Earth, and it still sells in its thousands, which depicted for the first time the gruelling conditions of China's rural poor, and which led to her winning the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1938. In today's episode, we learn more about Pearl's childhood and the ways in which her father's missionary zeal impoverished his family.
In 1897, Pearl's father, Absalom, was one of the first of five missionaries to buy a building plot from the Gooling Mountain Company, set up the year before by an enterprising young English missionary-come-businessman. Nearly 5,000 feet above sea level, thickly wooded, with cool air, fresh streams and luxuriant greenery, Gooling on Mount Lu, or Lushan, was the first purpose-built mountain resort in China. It was also, as Pearl said, a life-saving station. Absalom put up a stone shack on plot number 310, where for the first time in their lives, his children could run barefoot on the hillside, drink water straight from the stream, and eat the wild strawberries they picked in the woods without boiling them first. From now on, summer holidays became the high point of their year. Pearl was 6 years old when this period of relative normality came to an end. Her younger brother, Clyde, contracted diphtheria in January 1899. Struggling convulsively for breath, with rasping throat and livid grey face, and dying too suddenly for his father to be fetched back from his mission outpost. Pearl, who caught the fever from her brother, said she understood what had happened when she heard a Chinese woman's voice calling to the spirit of a dead child and realised that the cries came from inside the house instead of outside on the street. Absalom came home to bury his son. Carrie, who was 5 months pregnant, roused herself sufficiently to see Pearl past the worst danger, then relapsed into oblivion and torpor, exhausted in body and spirit, too weak even to nurse her remaining child back to health.